The humorous stuff in the news about Mormons. Can't wait to see the fun with their children this week in Mormon.
Oh yeah. What's up, my children? My name is Jeff, and I'm here. It's time for This Week in Mormons, and we are about to get real. It's about to get really real. People stop being polite.
I can't tell if you're rapping right now or if you're just like a concerned father.
It's a new style of music. It's
it's William Shatner meets Genuine.
It's concerned father rap talk.
Meets Janis Cap Perry.
It's
absolutely.
As if Janis Cap Perry met the band Cake. Met hip hop beats.
That's what I like that better. All right. I like that better. Birds fall from the window ledge above mine. Then they flap their wings at the last second.
Well, we have
that's an actual song, folks. That's an actual song.
Well, Al, we've established recently that apparently Cake and I are the same person. According,
you have the exact same political views, which I think is hilarious.
So
it's amazing because every time Jeff will share a link. The only other person to also share that link is Cake, the band. And I'm like, okay.
Really? Right. This has happened twice. Every time.
Jeff, how long for a trend? Two times.
You can draw that line now with those 2 points.
That's right. I have the Book of Mormon and the Bible now.
Exactly.
I have Cake and Jeff.
I think on my mission I came up with the 2 point thing to explain.
That was your idea.
I think,
yeah.
I came up with it on my own. I legitimately didn't. I thought I'd thought of this novel thing, and then I realized it's just one of these common.
Then you read further in the missionary handbook. Now, yeah. What was the big? Was it just the missionary handbook? Was that? That's Preach My Gospel. It's got branding and PR
It was the old missionary guide, which, speaking of which.
The missionary guide. Yeah.
I so desperately, if any of you have these, folks, seriously, please.
The tapes.
I want the tapes. If any of you have the tapes. You have the tapes?
I've got them. Yeah.
I wanted to digitize those for years.
Oh, sure. We can do it. I've got them in the box over there.
We could put them on Spotify.
I don't know if we can make money on them.
It costs like $40 to put an album on Spotify and everywhere else for that matter. And the church does own the copyright, but you've got to assume at this point.
What is this, CD Baby? Is that what you're doing?
You can use CD Baby if you want to do digital distro. It works out pretty well. I've wanted those tapes for years. I left mine in the field because I just kind of foolishly thought, oh, I'll get a missionary guide and the tapes. And even my discussions, like, I can just buy some stateside so I have them and then preach.
Yeah, you can buy them at the distribution center. $2. It'll be no problem. Don't take them home.
I should have, because what happened was Preach My Gospel came out near the end of my mission, and by the time I came home, they weren't selling any of the former things.
Yeah, well, they forced people to purge those missionary apartments. They kind of went through like a whole, you got to clean up your apartment.
There was no purge. I never had that.
No, I mean, like, since we've been home, they got rid of all the old stuff.
Did they really? Like, that was a deliberate thing?
I believe so, Jeff.
Oh, why would you get rid of the old discussions? They were delightful. And other useful passages? Who didn't love memorizing those? Those were amazing.
If you were a good missionary, that's what you did.
I had them all memorized. I knew them all. What the sad thing is how bad of a post-missionary I've been in that I got nothing.
No?
I mean, I know scriptures.
All right.
I don't know scriptures off the top of my head.
It's like that guy doesn't even listen to us, you know?
It's terrible.
It is what it is.
Oh, there's a good expression.
It's good. It's good. It's good.
What's going to happen is going to happen. Right.
What I said, I said.
Okay, sirrah,
I did what I did.
Sirrah. So, yeah, man. Al, how you been, buddy?
We're coming back after like what's it been a year.
Sure.
How long have we been missing each other? A month, probably.
It feels that way.
People, go to our Patreon and donate money, and we will do this more.
Actually, do you want to tell them about that, Al?
We need your donations. We should do a Joel Osteen thing and be like, if you pay us more money, you can stay in our church building while you're dying.
Oh, that's a very sensitive comment, Al. It's very good.
We need your donations. Only you can help me fly in my jet.
Al, do you want to do a genuine Patreon pitch?
No.
Okay. Do you want me to do it? I'll do it.
Well, not sure what I'm willing to commit. I'm just saying.
Al's not sure what he's willing to commit, but I'll tell you what this is. So, folks, if you don't know what Patreon is, P-A-T-R-E-O-N, Patreon is a way to support artists and podcasters and people. It's kind of like Kickstarter, but for people who regular.
I think you stop at artists. Let's call ourselves
artists. But it's like, you know, a Kickstarter is for a product, a one-off. Patreon is more like you can do a recurring bit of support for people producing content that you enjoy. And now there's some irony in it, of course, as we've scaled back some of our publication this year, that all of a sudden now we're asking you to support us financially. But what we're saying is, if you can up your Patreon amount, Al, dear Al, you have him on the record here, is committed to doing the show more regularly once more. Now, I know this sounds like extortion, but it's really
That's absolutely right.
This is an opportunity. Okay, I've got an opportunity for all of you, and that opportunity is $1 a month on Patreon. That's right, $1 a month. Just go on there, pledge your buck a month, give us enough. So right now we have like $11. There are more than 11 of you. We know this for a fact. We've looked at the
program. I like it. I like it.
That's all. Help us out. It helps us pay like server fees, and we're actually building a new TWIM website for realsies this time. We decided to invest more in TWIM.
That's true. We do that.
But we'd love it if you could be a part of it. So that's patreon.com/thisweekinmormons. Just go there, pledge a buck. A buck. Nothing costs a buck.
You're Jimmy Wales from Wikipedia meets, I don't know. Who's the guy that just died? The other Jerry Lewis. Jerry Lewis.
Yeah, this is exactly what this is. This is Jerry Lewis
meets Jimmy Wales on Wikipedia. Sure. That's what it is. Exactly. Just a dollar. If everybody gave a dollar, or Ira Glass, right? If everybody gave $5, we would have enough
difference.
To offer.
Jimmy Wales has a lot of money. I'm sure Ira Glass is handsomely paid for what he does. We just want to cover some expenses. That's true.
And I'm broke, guys. Just help me. All I need is a tank of gas to get home tonight, and Jeff needs a double cheeseburger.
Yeah. And to pay Metro fare. So
no, we only have $20 in cost a month. I feel like we're pretty responsible in our TWIM costs. We have server costs and bandwidth costs.
In our defense, part of that is because I've deliberately decreased the bitrate of our episodes so that we can decrease our server costs. So, folks, if you want CD quality TWIM in your ear at 320,
you
want
to be back to 192? Well,
no, we're usually at 128, but I'll take it up to 320, folks. 320. If you can bring out, come on, where are your pockets? Who will pledge? Who will praise? Come on, come on. Who loves us?
I'll send, yeah. Jeff's going to send a prayer out for every pledge he gets.
Every single one.
Prayer and thoughts. That's what we're going to give.
Yes.
That's what we're going to give. That's got to be worth $10.
Yeah. And then we'll read all the Doctrine and Covenant scriptures about like unrighteous dominion and weird things like that.
No, we'll get excommunicated in short order. Absolutely. Don't drive us to this, people. Anyway, yeah. Let's see. I've been well. I went adventuring.
You did some serious
speaking. Speaking of needing money, I've been traveling for the last month. I need your donations, people. I just need them. So I went to China and Tibet and traipsed about. I ate the hottest food of my life in a thing called the hot pot. And the hot pot was very hot. Now, it was in the name.
That was in Chengdu, right?
That was in Chengdu.
Chengdu is the capital of the Sichuan province. And this
I left my bumhole in Chengdu, they say. That's how the song goes.
Because right before you were going there, I watched an Anthony Bourdain where he actually goes to Chengdu, and he did a whole segment on the hot pot. And so when I saw the pictures, I was so delighted for you because I felt like I understood it more.
I was living the Bourdain.
Yeah.
No, it's crazy. So up in Tibet, we were at like this town we were staying in was at 13,500 feet. That's just like their normal living space. Like I think our tallest peak in America is what? Like, well, not Alaska, but it's like 14,000 feet.
It's Mount Whitney in California. It's about 15,000 feet.
Yeah. So the pass that we drove over was 16,800 feet as we're just like driving to these other towns. And I've never dealt with like altitude sickness stuff. And I did pretty good. I mean, I was just like short of breath here and there, but everybody in our group was, they were pretty floored by the altitude. It was crazy.
You ever see I don't know why you would, but there's an old Top Gear special when they drive their cars from, deeper in the rainforest part of Bolivia up over the Andes and into Chile. Anyway, it just made me think of that because there's a part when they're like way at high altitude trying to cross the Andes and their cars won't even work because they can't aspirate. It was crazy.
So I did that and then went for a week in the Philippines, had a great time on the islands there. Manila, I've never been to Manila. Manila was a mind blow. That place was...
I didn't know you did much Manila. I thought you just kind of maybe flew in and
I spent 2 days in Manila, a day there on the way out and a day on the way back. And on the way back, like I'd just done a week on this like island beach. So on the way back, I just found this like tucked away hotel and sat there. It was lovely.
Sounds like you made the most of it.
It was a good time. Mm-hmm. And then that's a lot of flying. 14 flights in 30 days.
That
I was it was amazing race style. I was really going for it.
Oh, no, so, man. Yeah, your pictures looked quite excellent.
Thank
especially
you.
In Tibet. No, that looked great.
Yeah, and just as a public service announcement, people, they have this option on Instagram where you can do multiple photos. I don't need to see multiple posts from you.
Boom.
I tried to lead with example. You got three posts from me for that whole trip. I think that was more than generous.
But multiple photos per post.
That's right. I would max out the 10. I wasn't picky with what went on after the sixth or seventh photo.
I would say one of my favorite ones was the video of you. You were there over your birthday, if I recall.
Yeah.
And they put some sort of top hat on you, and I'm not sure what else. And you were basically regaled by the locals as this giant ogre.
Oh, they loved me.
Honored on your birthday, and the video
I took more pictures. So we had one. I was staying in a hostel type place, and. And the policeman of the town comes in, like does not knock. He just opens my door and comes in. And I'm like in bed in my G's. And he's like, motions for me to stand up. And I stand up and I'm like, what's going on? And my wife is there in the bed next to me and is like wondering what's happening. And he just comes in for a selfie. He just wanted a picture with the tall white giant.
This is why you also never sleep in just your Z's. You never know when the authorities in an authoritarian country are just going to come into your apartment and want to get a selfie with you.
That is a great point.
That alone is a reason to make sure you're at least wearing pajamas.
I have never worn pajamas, maybe in my whole life. Here, I turned that picture into a GIF. We can share this on the website, but I just texted it to you. Now you have one of my greatest gifts to humanity.
Oh, thank you very, very much.
How are you, Jeff? What have you done since we talked last?
Not as much exciting stuff as you have done. I do try to think about I went to California, so that was good. We were in California. Yeah.
You're potty training a child, yes?
Yeah, that's fun too. We went to California. We had a family wedding. My wife was out there for another one before that, but then I met up with them.
Two weddings. Who's marrying?
My wife's cousin got married in Sacramento, and then our niece got married in San Diego. Yes, niece.
How you fun. Flew for a niece's wedding?
Yeah, we're a close bunch on my wife's side.
My niece got married, too. I was in China, and I sent her some Amazon stuff.
Well, that was nice.
Same idea.
So we had a grand time. And my son is quite the dance machine. I don't think I've shared any of these videos with you yet, buddy. But he's sitting there at these weddings during dance time, like for an hour straight, busting into circles of people he doesn't know and just like rocking as hard as he can and bouncing around.
He's his father's child.
More or his mom's, really. I'm not sure. But I don't know. There's something pretty awesome about seeing a two-year-old just busting a move. And he had some rhythm now, man. He's hardcore.
Dude, so that was look fun. At you. You're making musicians. Way to go.
So that was good. California was nice. It's always nice to go back home. I actually had a very delightful time this time around. I had not been in the Pacific in a very long time. I'm going to wax romantic here for a second. And my wife's family...
Wait, where did you go? You said Pacifica?
No, the Pacific.
Oh, the Pacific. You haven't been to the other coast.
No, the Atlantic is not... It doesn't resonate the same way. Unless you're in...
How often do you go to the beach?
Not often, because even though D.C. looks close, it's actually about 2.5 hours away if you either go to Delaware or down to Virginia Beach.
Just traffic.
Yeah. It's just far, because we're by the Chesapeake is close, but that's not the beach. If you want the actual Atlantic, it's a bit of a...
Okay, yeah. Continue waxing.
And it takes all day. I didn't grow up that way. I grew up, you go to the beach for a couple hours, then you move on with your day.
That's not true. I've been to Placentia, and it's still 2 hours to the beach.
It's about half an hour, but okay. Anyway, my wife's family actually lives close to the beach, and we go there often just to walk or just chill, get some tacos on a bluff overlooking the Pacific. But I hadn't been in, and my dear boy enjoyed playing in the waves, and then I let him stay with his mom. And I decided to go body surfing out there by myself, and it had been a long time since I'd swum out there in the frigid waters of the Pacific, no wetsuit.
Yeah.
I really felt I had a zen-like experience there.
Yeah?
I was just out there. And I felt more at peace than I probably have in months. It was delightful. I just wanted to be out there all day in that nice...
I wish you could be there every day.
I know.
You're running a high stress individual right now, and I just wish you the waves, Jeff.
I'd be less difficult to be around. It's true. I mean, sure, the Atlantic.
If it's
is nice,
the beaches,
it's the
beaches that you want, then you will have them.
Anyway, that's been good. And other than that, I've just been working a lot. It's been busy. So life is exciting. Still teaching gospel doctrine. Great calling.
You're the best. The best.
Glad to have
you. Well, people,
this Sunday I will be teaching a lesson on the succession crisis. I'm looking forward to that one. I think that's an interesting bit of church history.
So Jeff actually represented TWIM on a panel recently and realized we are one of the granddaddies of the podcasting world. Everybody, there are hundreds of copycats, tens of copycats of the weekly news format
of ours
we have pioneered.
I mean, it's true.
We just want to say, we're like half committed to the news format. We just are here to talk.
And that's how I pitched it. I was given a few minutes to talk about the show, and I actually said, aside from the news and guests that we have here and there, in many ways this show just serves as a long-form diary of our lives. And I said, from when we were guys out of college and unemployed to, you know, being single dudes and dating and getting married and having kids, and it just sort of follows like two Mormon men who have had callings in their lives.
There are some of you who have come along this entire journey with us. You know our life.
Yeah.
You know.
But anyway, I'll much love to everyone else who showed up on that. It was a simple little thing, but it was very nice. Leading LDS put it together, and so
what would you say is our headline this week, Jeff? What's the big news story of the week?
Well, I was going to segue into it because I talked about the succession crisis. It's not the big story, but I was going to mention old Denver Snuffer because you want to talk about offshoots.
Oh, yeah.
And folks that aren't into what we're doing.
Again, yeah. Denver Snuffer, not his real name.
No, that is his real name.
No?
Yes.
Okay, you win.
I believe this is by Peggy Fletcher Stack, and I believe I saw her say that that's his real name because nobody believes it. Who's named Denver Snuffer? I don't know.
first, who changes the last name to Snuffer?
Snuffer. So
he's still going. That's
what
surprised me.
Well. Yeah, we have an episode from years ago called "Snuffing Out Snuffer," and it was actually about when Denver Snuffer got excommunicated. So I guess we shouldn't laugh about that.
That was a witty witticism.
So he has a group called The Remnant, and essentially Denver Snuffer, who was excommunicated for apostasy, argued that Mormonism has left its initial roots especially that anyone can receive.
He said after Joseph Smith died, the authority left with him.
The authority left with him, and everyone can still, and even then by the time, and there were many people when Joseph Smith died who thought the church had strayed from its original Restoration era roots in Palmyra and Kirtland and such. You know, when it was about anybody could receive these great experiences, things weren't quite as institutionalized or even corporatized, as you might say today.
So the man's still kicking. He was excommunicated. They pushed the group out, and now he's doing a big conference in Boise where he plans to canonize the Book of Mormon. He found a loophole where the Mormon Church never canonized the Book of Mormon by his purview, he's going to be the first one to canonize it.
Actually, let's be clear about this. He didn't say the Book of Mormon wasn't canonized, right? Didn't he just say that he said the last major canonization was Eastern Orthodox in 1672, and the Mormon Church hasn't canonized all of their scriptures, and you and I were wondering what that referred to.
Well, if the last canonization he's acknowledging is 1672, I feel like that's saying that the Book of Mormon didn't count.
No, I agree. But he just says all of it. And we were saying how Doctrine and Covenants, a lot of those sections earlier on, or Book of Commandments, were presented to the saints for ratification. So that seems good. So church history people can tell us accordingly. But was the Book of Mormon ever actually presented to the saints as a, hey, do you vote on this being scripture? Or is it just that it was the missionary tool and we just all agreed, hey, this is holy writ?
Actually not confident enough to say one way or the other, nor do I think it matters.
Oh, it might, because then that's what was not canonized. It
he zinged him.
Canonized.
He zinged him.
Also, was the Book of Abraham
when you
canonized?
Google canon scripture, he wants to be the first result.
Anyway, he's doing Snuffer's still going, man. It's amazing to think that we still have people offshooting from the original, It's just, it seems like such an old thing. Actually, that might as well dovetail into...
Speak of the devil!
Yeah, take us there, Al. Where is that? I'm trying to find it here.
No, so there's an article written about there is a land in Independence, Missouri, where so Independence is interesting because this is where the New Jerusalem will be restored. There's a temple sort of complex of 12
Jerusalem,
temples.
Why can't you hear me?
That's right. 12 temples will be built in this spot, and the Church of Christ, which is an offshoot of Mormonism, the reorganized Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, or now the Community of Christ, which is an offshoot. There's one or two other ones that small offshoots of the church that all claim that this is their holy land. This central Independence, Missouri plot is core to their religion. And so sort of a Dome of the Rock sort of thing going on here, but with much smaller populations.
Well, and also within the same general fate, you know, I mean, right.
Yeah, all right, that's
all
true.
Latter-day Saints, this is not an Islam versus an Abrahamic umbrella, of course.
But yeah, a lot of offshoots claiming right to the land, and yeah. I'm expecting Denver Snuffer to show up soon. And camp out there. So,
what about the Bichtonerites or Sidney Rigdon's folks? Where are they?
It's actually an interesting history. I feel like. Well, Jeff, you taught about this a little in your like gospel doctrine class a little while ago, but re-looking at sort of the idea that Zion will be built in Independence, Missouri, is this thing that we don't talk about or think about very often. And to sort of appreciate the history and all the people and events that are tied up in there is kind of an interesting thing. It's even interesting to go to Missouri or to Nauvoo, where Nauvoo you have the Community of Christ still with a big presence there, and they actually do like money making tours and stores in Nauvoo, and the Mormons also giving tours, and like they kind of have to live together because the Community of Christ owns the Kirtland Temple in Ohio. They own the Mansion House.
They own a lot of stuff in Nauvoo.
The Red Brick Store. And so they have a couple of these key pieces that they've restored, and they actually will give tours through and things. But they have to work together with both faiths. But both of those lands are sacred to those faiths. Kind of interesting. You should know about it.
I like this little anecdote here from the church historian Stephen Olson, who said, I didn't know this one before. In 2003, President Hinckley was given a tour of the Kirtland Temple, and he actually asked for a few minutes alone in the sanctuary, which was against the rules, but they let him do it. So they took everyone out of the temple and let President Hinckley spend an hour in the temple by himself. And what he said was he contemplated, quote, the solemnities of eternity that transpired there. And they just said, like, that was an amazing act of generosity. And so it's funny because we've had splits, but yeah, we kind of support one another in a lot of ways. This is a good rundown. See, this is the good stuff here. Good job, Kimberly Winston. This isn't all polemic or anything. This is just like, hey, look at our shared history and the fact that, and some stuff changes hands. Was it Hans Mill a few years ago that the Community of Christ finally came back to the church?
Yeah. Well, you don't want to maintain that. If you've been out to Hans Mill, it's quite the drive. No one wants to get out there.
What's actually
there?
What is actually there now? Is there anything other than just the site where it happened?
There is a plaque.
Okay.
That is often shot up by the locals. And that is all.
Okay. Okay.
The end, Jeff. What do you want from me?
Nothing. I like it. I love what you've done here, Al. So some big news. Let's talk about what's going down in Houston, man. It's getting sad.
Yeah.
The big news, you might have all seen this the past couple days. And in case you've been living, I don't know where, and you're out, or in Tibet, for example, who knows? Hurricane Harvey, Tropical Storm Harvey, has inundated the Houston area with record-breaking amounts of rain.
I was expecting Harvey to be much less significant than it was.
I think many were. It's because it's just pure rain, and it's lingered, too. It's just kind of hung around. Today, it finally officially broke a record in the continental U.S. for
like
rainfall.
51 inches or something ridiculous.
Yeah, 51.8 inches. And so because of that, and because Houston is flat, and while Houston has rivers and some flood control channels and a lot of things, that's just too much for nearly any system. I'm sure there are some things that could be done to improve it, but that's a lot to take on. And we've watched for a few days as the water line has crept up on the temple in Houston, which is up northwest of the downtown area near Cypress Creek. And if you've watched some of the news, this whole Cypress Creek area has wildly flooded. I watched a video today of firefighters going around on boats, and you're talking, it's McMansions and stuff everywhere, and the entire first story of these homes is underwater completely. You don't even see the front door.
Is Houston one, like, would they be buying flood insurance there?
I mean, it's basically a swamp. I would guess so. So anyway, the church is actually very close to the creek. If you look on Google Maps, it's quite proximate to the creek itself, but it's on a little bit of a knoll. And so the water slowly got up there, and the church had said, hey, the water's gotten into an auxiliary building, but it's not at the temple yet. But now, as of yesterday, the newsroom of the church actually said that there's about 4 to 5 inches of water inside the temple, but nobody can assess anything because they won't let them go in there while it's in there. They just know that it's in the temple. The one thing that's been very disheartening on this is, even if people are doing it kind of tongue-in-cheek, is how many responses I've seen online to this across social media with people just saying things like, oh, I guess God didn't protect his building after all, or things along those lines. Just kind of trying to make a mockery of it, like, well, even if, and it's even from active members or others who are just like, ha ha ha, oh boy, you'd think this would be protected, right? Because it's the temple, it's the Lord's house.
Well, it's actually interesting from a cultural standpoint. I think there is an expectation that you know, the heavens will part and it will go, the storm will go around the temple. And
that's something like that.
Like the faith promoting experience.
But for that.
If people's response, like if we're not protecting our buildings, if we're not using them or putting the effort in, nothing reminds us well, like the Lord letting the temple be ransacked, so to speak.
Yeah. And this has happened in the past. In 2003, the Appius Samoa Temple caught on fire and burned down.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't think an indictment of the Samoan people or anything like that, but they're still structures and we care for them, but I also don't. It's one of these cultural things where we assume there's some kind of doctrine that the Lord's house will never fall. And if that were the case, I think it would almost stand to reason that preventive maintenance would not even be necessary if the temples were these infallible structures.
Look at you vacuuming. Where's your God now, people?
Well, like, look at you, DC.
Using
temple,
Windex.
Closing the temple for 2 years for major renovations. You know, like, why would that be necessary? Why would you close the Montreal temple for structural deficiencies?
Why wouldn't you want the Provo temple to not look like a 70s retro hall?
It's so good there, man. I found that to be just kind of sad, but... Yeah. But the big reminder in all of this, because I understand everyone being really bummed out that the temple is flooding, right? But the bottom line is the church has a lot of resources, and the temple is going to be fine. It's going to stink. It's going to be closed for a while. They're going to have to fix a lot of – it's going to be damaged for sure. It might even have to involve a rededication, you know? But the church has the resources to do it, whereas there are thousands of people who have been likely permanently displaced from their homes and lost most of their belongings, and they don't have the means to just – pick up and fix it all, right? I mean, that's the much bigger tragedy.
Is the church giving a humanitarian aid response? Yeah.
Yeah, we're involved. I think we were prepping the response before the storm as far as materials.
Oh, it's actually in that same article.
Yeah, there's an article on Deseret News about how now they're using one of the meeting houses in the area as a shelter and a boat command center. Just crazy to think that, like, the stake center is the boat command center. Where
they're sending pallets of water and other supplies on several trucks. Good.
Yeah, we're doing our part, which is important. I just hope everyone can remember in this, while we of course care about our own, we represent a small minority of the overall affected population, and hopefully we can play a good role in helping.
Well, it's great because our first obligation is to other members of the church, but like all of the meeting houses have been offered up as places where people can take refuge.
That raises an interesting question. Is our first obligation to members of the church? Is that a thing? I'm just curious about your thoughts on that then.
I think so. Like from a welfare perspective, right? Like our obligation is to take care of members so that they can take care of others.
That's true. But for example, they stress that a bishop is not just the bishop of those who are on the rolls of the ward. The bishop is the bishop over the entire geographical area of the ward.
Is that true? So like if I'm just move into an area, I can go to the bishop and be like, hey, can you help with my rent?
I've seen it happen before. I've seen people roll in and want to like see the bishop, or they just
in my experience with all that. Well, because I've actually seen that too, particularly like inactive or people that have left the church,
yeah,
went to a
yeah.
place, and they'll reach out to the bishop. And the bishop often, you know, the well, So it may be true, but the requirements are the same of like, you need to come to church and you need to participate in a fast and like,
sure,
you know, do these things and then we'll help you. You still have criteria, but I don't know that membership is ever a criteria.
Not that I know of, no. So I thought that was curious for you to say, like, if technically we do have an obligation to our own first and foremost, or if our
I would, to the community. If I was a bishop in an area, like, the phone tree goes to the members,
yes,
first,
of course,
right?
Well, that's what you know as well. I mean, you're not just going to like,
yeah,
you're not just going to dial at random and hope you meet random people in the community. Obviously, you're going to work through the auxiliaries and say, hey, let's check in here and make sure everybody is.
Well, and if our members are taken care of, then we can host people in our branch buildings and try, yeah, and help things.
Exactly.
But there's one in Texas that was turned into the Boat Command Center. Had been volunteered for the Boat Command Center, which was kind of rad.
Oh, no,
any
man.
Of these that are above water, you can take refuge in Mormon church buildings. Even if Joel is a little busy, you can go to a Mormon church and get
by the way, to any of you who are follow our Facebook page, which you should, I just want to say, like, this morning we published a quick thing that just said,
Jeff did this.
We said, I'm going to say we said, genuine question, like, could the temple have been prevented from flooding if they just, like, sandbagged around the doors? It seems basic, but it was literally pushed
douchebag
as a genuine inquiry.
Let me say on behalf of all of our listeners, how dare you?
I know. And that was the response, like, this is so snarky, with one presenting a the definition of snark that did not actually support the conversation. So to you, sir, you are a fool, and I do not recognize you.
Whoa, you said raka.
Yeah. Anyway, I just thought that was a genuine question. I haven't had to deal with serious flooding in my life, and I just wondered, like,
As one who's known Jeff for a number of years, I assure you that was not a genuine question, and he was being snarky, and he's hiding behind it now.
Snarky. You're being snarky.
I know him. I know his ways.
You don't know any of my ways.
Speaking of
also,
I was going the natural disaster route. In Sierra Leone, there was a massive 5-acre landslide that 5 acres is a lot. And
yeah,
some Mormons were amongst those killed. There's 380 people killed. That's a lot of people to die in a landslide. That's a big deal.
Yeah. But yeah. That's a huge
problem. The times are upon us, people. Repent and return to the Lord.
It's kind of funny how we'll single that stuff out. I've always had mixed feelings about that. Like, hey, Deseret News. It could just be about the landslide in general, but I guess the
Deseret News has no reason to write about the landslide.
I know.
Save Mormons died.
Well, they would have in their national edition, which no longer
exists. This
is
what I'm saying. Our responsibility is first to fellow members and then to others.
That's just crazy. I was going to pivot just to the temple thing real quick. The Tucson temple was dedicated a few weeks ago. We probably made mention of it, but one of my favorite newer temples as far as design goes, because they modeled it after the cathedral in Florence. It has the dome and such.
Yeah, yeah. The Tucson Temple, or as we know it here in friendly circles, just another temple in Arizona.
Sure, or Tucson, for that
matter. Yeah, yeah. Either one. Let's see. We got a lot of other good stuff going on. VidAngel still sucks. Those guys
itself doesn't suck.
Those guys are snatching victory from the jaws of defeat. Wait, snatching defeat from the jaws of victory. They are failing despite all the good intentions in the world.
What is that? So what happened with VidAngel real quick? You know, the streaming service that lets you filter stuff, and now they hacked Netflix.
They appealed the injunction, and the court said, are you crazy? No.
It's basically, the sad thing was the court threw this down on the same day I got an email that VidAngel had brought back its affiliate program.
Keep it up. Keep it up, fellas.
Inopportune timing. Here's a good one I want to get into. So we wondered about what was going to go on next year during for most of us, the third hour of Church, Priesthood, and Relief Society.
The third hour of power, as we call it.
I'd wondered this because as we've used the Presidents of the Church manuals for 20 years. A couple of them we used for 2 years. The first 2 years we did them, we used them for the first 4 years, we used each manual for 2 years. And then years later when they did Joseph Smith, they did 2 years. But the point is, after all this time, we're now on President Hinckley. And he's it. We've done everybody, all the past prophets of the modern era.
That's crazy, because I remember when this started, I was like, man, we'll just be doing this forever.
Yeah.
And then we did.
And it was back in 98. So we did it all, and I was wondering, what's going to happen next year? Are they going to make a manual for President Monson, the living prophet? I mean, there's not like
no.
a chance, but would they?
No.
It turns out they've used this as an opportunity to just ditch that those books entirely, and now instead the new materials will be Come Follow Me for Melchizedek Priesthood and Relief Society meetings, which is modeled after Come Follow Me, the program used for youth. And so there will be a whole new thing now. So to give you a brief rundown, previously the way we did it, for the most part, let's just say from priesthood, you'd usually you'd have a presidency lesson or Relief Society on the first Sunday of the month. Second and third were typically from the presidents of the church manual. Fourth Sunday was teaching for our time, which usually involved conference talks chosen by the stake presidency. And fifth Sunday would often be just, you know, a combined meeting, whenever that happened. So the new way is that on the first Sunday, it's supposed to be about counseling together about local needs, but it's still led by the presidency. So I think there's a lot of leeway there to make that whatever you want it to be. And then now second and third Sundays are going to be based on recent general conference messages. So neat, which is basically teaching for our time twice a month. And then the fourth Sunday will be a special topic chosen by general church leaders and announced in the ensign. I think that one could actually be very interesting. Maybe they'll have us really get into relevant topical stuff, perhaps. We could have a whole lesson on like refugees. I don't know. Like, what will it be?
Any which direction we can go.
So that's all happening, and it's changing.
Let me give you my big breaking news here, Jeff.
Oh, okay. You want to move on? All right.
The whole reason I got married is a sham now.
Yeah?
The reason was because single men were not allowed to serve in the temple after 31. Did you know this?
I was aware of this, yes.
It was an atrocity. As soon as I turned 31, I was no longer... Well, and I wasn't sure... The thinking on this, either they thought that by serving in the temple, I'd just be trying to pick up on women, which is true.
I've heard of that.
Or they'd say that that perhaps I would be distracted from starting a family, much akin to the why we're not allowed to serve more missions, but women are sort of thing.
It's just you love the temple so much, you can't bring yourself to do it.
Yep. But either way, I was not allowed in there, or they just assume that once you turn 31 as a man, you're sexually transgressing, or you would be married, and that's why you can't go in there. They're just like circumspecting the whole thing. Do you like my Arrested Development reference there? The
circumvent.
So they got rid of that, which is great because it was a dumb rule. It was a really weird, makes you feel like a weird old guy rule. And
women could carry on. Women could do it anytime.
So now I'm married and don't even need to be. Go figure.
Well, your wife's lucky to have you.
She chose me.
I'm curious.
The other one was also recently divorced folk.
That's the one that blew my mind. I don't know if you have any insights on that, having been an ordinance worker. That previously, if you were divorced, you could not be an ordinance worker for, I think, 5 years post-divorce. Yep.
Which again, same reasons. They assume that you're just trying to rebound in the celestial realm.
No, but what is...
You know that I look good in white, Jeff. It's my tan skin against that stark white. And they... I mean, is it my fault? I don't think so.
You look Trumpian with the contrast in skin color to garb.
You have it down. Thank you.
I've genuinely wondered what the real reasons are for it. I've never found out like what those policies were rooted in. I have no idea.
No, I'm not sure. I can't imagine.
Because we all have our Mormon myths and the things that we assume they're about, but I've never...
Myths.
The one thing that does not change for now, though, is I believe it still stands that if you are a mother and you have minor age children, you are not allowed to be a temple worker. Because your job is to be at home with them, doing things with them, even if they're all at mutual and school stuff.
Well, it is weird that they don't let that be like a case-by-case basis. I feel like all the buildings being closed on Monday night is sort of the same thing because it's like, well, you should be home.
Well, it's family home evening, yeah.
But people have family home evening. Like, not everybody makes it on the Monday night thing. And so, like, on the one hand, good. Mothers should be at home raising their children. Their job is not to go to the temple and work there. On the other hand, like, if that's a good thing for them, why is that a rule? We should be able to, like, kind of... Move around in there.
I do think, like a lot of rules in the church, there's a disclaimer that these are still subject to local conditions and circumstances.
That is not the case with these.
I think this is with some of them. Yeah, I think.
The temple ones, because I absolutely, like, I was serving on the high council, and my stake president couldn't get me through because he was like, absolutely, you can go serve in the temple. And then he said, never mind.
Well, but what I'm saying, local circumstances. For all you know, it's a stake president. He could be going to a temple presidency that has its own rules about it. I'm saying I've heard instances of where these rules have been essentially flouted, or the leaders involved were like, no, in your case, it's going to
poppycock.
So bull butter. Also, in this same change, randomly, they said they're getting rid of chapel sessions that you usually do before what? Something like Ward Temple Night. When you sit there and then your bishop gets up and says some words before you all go upstairs for a session. That's, for whatever reason, that is also...
That's my favorite part.
I'm sure it was, but it is no more.
I wonder why. Why ditch that?
I don't know. It's kind of a nice way for everyone to meet together first and be like, hey, this is our ward. There will likely be people not of our ward in the session, so here we all are to worship together, and then we'll go upstairs and do it. Otherwise, you're just showing up and, you know, waving across the room at other people. I don't know.
No, a lot of loud hugs and whispered highs.
I think they owe it to us to give us the reasons why. It's like they're asking us to have faith without having everything explained to us.
Yeah, that's fair.
And I don't understand what that's all about.
No, none of us know. So a couple of other quick mentions. When people gathered at the church office building, President Monson peeked out the window. Oh, they were gathered there to watch the eclipse.
Ah, yes.
President Monson comes to the window, apparently to see the eclipse.
He was in his apartment that's across the way.
And everybody sang, they sang happy birthday to him. Neato.
Do you think this was staged?
No.
I like to believe there's enough spontaneous love out there for that just to happen.
Yeah. Happy birthday. Yeah. And then David O. McKay's birthplace home is on the Parade of Homes tour.
Oh, my goodness. It's going to be wild. Up there in Huntsville.
I believe it's a ranch-style home. One floor, and you're gonna love it. You just go, the carpet remains from when he was born there. You can still see the stain that the handmaiden left.
It's a two room house. How is that still standing? Who's still trying to live in a two room house?
I don't know. Pious members.
The family has stopped doing public tours. This is your last chance to see a Victorian era house. It is cool because it's older. I mean, it's built in 1872, but. I also just kind of laugh because, like, okay, this is a house where a kid was raised. I don't know if it played a large role in the way he was the prophet or anything, but cool.
No, if you look closely, you'll see where he really learned about Jesus.
Yeah.
Probably.
Hey, Al, should we get into Charlottesville?
Sure.
I want to get into that mess. That was kind of crazy a few weeks ago, everything that's gone down there, and it's very much opened up the discussion on racism and where we are as a people. I think that's been a big part of the zeitgeist for the past couple of weeks. And if you recall, the church initially released a statement about all of that, and I'd say their initial statement was soft, a little soft. It just said, you know, there's deep concern. People of any faith or of no faith at all should be troubled by the increase of intolerance we see. And then just kind of saying, hey, we pray for compassion. I hate to say boilerplate, but just kind of normal. But then, this was great. Al, I think you're familiar with the Twitter individual Wife with a Purpose.
Yeah.
Wife with a Purpose is LDS. We all believe she lives in St. George, but I'm not quite sure. And she celebrates white culture. That is her jam. And her Twitter feed is just...
White culture meaning...
Do you want to explain that to the fine people?
White culture just meaning that, like, so what she says is that...
How is she verified?
White people are... everybody else gets to celebrate their culture, but we don't get to celebrate white culture, which is a very sort of KKK approach to... We need more white pride.
Keep this ministry... Oh, she actually... a lot of things have happened. She got verified, but now her tweets are protected. Oh, man.
You can't read them?
Can't read them. Hey. That's disappointing. How am I supposed to hate watch? Goodness gracious. Anyway, yeah. So she's saying there's white culture, and you're like, no, there's not. And she talks about how it's European culture. It's like, well, that's European culture. Is that white? Anyway, we could get into this all day. The point is, she and others who celebrate white culture, which is really just white supremacy by another name, had used the church's sort of tepid initial response as an excuse, saying, see, like, we can still believe this. And they were quoting stuff from Matthew, and they were pushing forward. So then a few days later, the church comes out. This was like guns blazing. I this is one of the bolder things I think the church has said in a while. It says, it has been called to our attention that there are some among the various pro-white and white supremacy communities who assert that the church is neutral toward or in support of their views. Nothing could be further from the truth. They said, you know, the first and great commandment is thou shalt love the Lord thy God with all thy heart, with all thy soul, and with all thy might, and then love thy neighbor as thyself. Then they say, white supremacist attitudes are morally wrong and sinful, and we condemn them. Church members who promote or pursue a white culture or white supremacy agenda are not in harmony with the teachings of the church. That's pretty direct. Yep. They don't usually get that direct about stuff. That's not as
on the one hand. Hard for a Twitter account to get a response from the church. Well done, a wife.
And
purposeful.
Then she actually responded and straight up said, I don't listen to the church's PR department. Have someone from the First Presidency tell me I can't love my culture. Then we'll talk.
Zingdom.
It's like not our job to say someone should be in a disciplinary council or anything like that. But
no, and we certainly will not.
No, we will not. And a lot of people I saw were saying, like, can we excommunicate her already? That's not what we should be doing, folks. That's not anyone's job.
That's not how you cheer on repentance, people.
But I do believe that she doesn't understand exactly where things from the newsroom come from. Now, it's not a letter from the pulpit that's signed by the First Presidency to be read on a Sunday, but you'd better believe a statement like that was vetted through the brethren. And they okayed
a follow-up tweet with President Monson sort of giving a thumbs up would have been
good.
Very, very.
But this is a good reminder, folks, that when things like that come out of the newsroom, that is the newsroom announcing what church positions are on something, ergo what church policy is on something. And so
it's true. It's all true.
But man, the Charlottesville stuff has just been crazy, and it blows my mind that there are those in our faith who would support agendas like that. I don't want to get into all the murkiness of the bait and the Antifa and all that. That all gets very complicated. But just to think that there are among us Latter-day Saints who are genuinely feel...
Oh, yeah, you kind of get caught up in that moment where you're like, and we're all on the same team, right? And you got somebody who's like, no. And you're like, wait, what?
Well, and then you forget. I wonder how much of the, if any of this, there's just general racism and a lot of things that go back with, especially in the U.S. with American history. But also the fact that they've changed Book of Mormon references over the years, all that white and delightsome stuff that's been around. And you have to wonder how much that might have sort of fed it a little bit, that we had this whole idea, you know, the dark seed of Cain, all that kind of stuff, that probably didn't help in the idea that white is pure. I mean, I'm not going to knock, you know, how we dress in temples or anything like that, but... Right, but I'm glad to see the church taking a pretty firm position on where we are with those sorts of issues. I mean, that's really good of us to do, because otherwise it just opens up.
No, that was a great response from the church. I'm not sure what you're referencing with everything else, but absolutely with the church. There's actually a really sort of insightful. It was called The Letter to Mormons. This was written by a gal in Gilbert, Arizona, who was a non-LDS woman, and wrote it to her neighbors. I think it's interesting because we as Mormons are very quick to sort of circle the wagons and take care of ourselves. And even when when you talk about who to date, it's like, well, we encourage you to date others in the faith because you marry who you date. And then who should you be friends with? Well, you know, your good friends are probably they're going to believe the same things as you and go to church with you. That's how you know they're good. And we sort of use this rhetoric very flippantly. And then you get these places that are like the majority are Mormon. And you put yourself in the shoes of somebody that is not Mormon and trying to integrate into that community and imagine the struggles that person would go through. She says things like, teach your kids to be inclusive of my kids, please. Can you encourage them to sit with mine at lunch? Can you invite them to birthday parties and slumber parties? And it's funny because if you're outside of Gilbert, Arizona, or out of Utah, you know, in living in Missouri or in DC, it's the other way around. You want everybody else to accept your Mormon kid and take him to slumber parties and be a part of this. And so it's just interesting to see that how quickly we forget as we get into majority LDS communities and things to watch out for. It was a good read.
It was a good read. I mean, it's when you run the risk of any dominant culture, it makes it so exclusionary. It's almost like we're better off when there's just a bunch of random people that all comprise, you know, 15% of the community. And so you're all just living your life, doing your thing.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because you don't think much about it. Like, I didn't think about that stuff growing up. I was glad where I grew up had enough Mormons that I felt like I had kids at Mutual and I had friends, but most of my friends were not Mormon, and it was just like, whatever. I was a Mormon kid. My friend was Catholic. Here's my Hindu buddy. Like, whatever. We were all just hanging out.
You were a melting pot of Orange County.
Well, yes, Orange County.
I mean, outside of poor people, you didn't have any of those, but everybody else, you had all the other cultures represented.
Yeah, we're very much known for Republican politics and, of course, our inclusiveness and diversity.
Right.
That's what we're famous for in good old OC. A couple quick mentions for you here. Elder Holland spoke at a conference on chiasmus. Chiasmus. I always say that incorrectly, y'all. You can fix me.
Yeah, well, chiasmus, as you know, is that's the writing styles that sort of reference each other. So it'll start out in this poetic form, and it'll go 1, 2, 3 steps in, and then 3, 2, 1 steps back out. And you see it in the Old Testament a lot, and then... guided a bunch of research and found strong evidence of it in the Book of Mormon.
Yeah. So because Elder Holland knows his stuff, he was sort of the keynote speaker at a chiasmus conference that was held in the middle.
No, he was he just made concluding remarks.
All right. I want to call him a keynote, but if you just want to say he's the closing remark person.
No, so they had this whole conference, and then he was just saying a few words at the end.
He gave it the seal of approval.
Yeah, yeah. So, well, what's interesting, so his comment, he says, I believe God intends us to find and use the evidence he has given, reasons, if you will, which affirm the truthfulness of his work. I often wonder about this, about like the pursuit of, you know, the geography of the Book of Mormon and trying to find, you know, evidences there and what drivers are there. And I had somebody tell me that, and it made sense to me that there was just enough evidence about the Book of Mormon for you to believe it's true, and just enough missing that you'd be able, you know, like you're not going to get a testimony about the Book of Mormon because it's going to be proved to you. And that was never the intent, right? Like we're never going to find Mormon's breastplate dug up in some hill and say, oh, well, obviously the Book of Mormon is true. Now you need to believe it. Don't believe it. It's true. It's an actual ancient record. That's not the intent. The intent is that you go to the Spirit and gain a testimony of it. And so there's always a mix in there. But I love, you know, as you come to believe in it and you can find evidences of it, I think there is an opportunity for us to build our testimony around some of that greater understanding, I guess, we'd find.
Yeah, I'm dying to know which actual river is the River Sidon. I need to know.
Yeah, well, it's the one that's all bloody, okay? So, obviously.
The St. Lawrence. Also, Elder Christofferson won a World Peace Prize at the World Peace Forum in India.
Oh, good for him.
They gave it to him. They said, you, sir, have done peace.
Said, yo, peace.
Therefore, I believe it was to sort of give it to the church at large, but... I don't know if he accepted. Did he get up there and say, like, I'm accepting this on the church's behalf? Or did he just say, thank you, thank you. I've worked very hard. Watergate was a big moment for me. Much appreciated.
No, that's where I would have gone. That's where I would have gone. Pull the big one up there and just be like, you know, I thought you'd never notice that I was really peaceful. And I'm just really glad that my work here.
I've been a pacifist since Vietnam. Finally, somebody noticed.
I'd like, you know, Nader could have come with him, but he didn't.
I would love if he accepted it jointly with Ralph Nader.
There's no time for jokes, Ralph. Everybody, thanks for joining us. It's fun to get back in here and chit chat and be with you all. We are interested in doing this more and having more great content for you. Come say aloha. Come be a part of our world. Email us at contact@thisweekinmormons.com. We'd love to hear from you.
Yeah, and visit us, of course, at thisweekinmormons.com. And we have social media. We are known to use it primarily for our own means and to improve our own brand. So if you want to be a part of that, everybody, follow us on Facebook, also Twitter, Instagram.
If you want to be offended at the definition of snark, Jeff awaits you.
We will gladly engage on that level with you, argue with you about minutia. It's going to be a complete delight. Or we'll just post stuff and hopefully you can have a discussion with the rest of the TWIM community, who are a wonderful bunch of folks, and we enjoy having them around. And if this is your first time hearing the show, please subscribe in iTunes or on Android, however you want to do it.
Yep,
questions
yep,
about yep. that, send us an email. We're happy to help you out if you don't know how to do it.
Be wholesome, be wealthy, and be hazy.
It's actually be well, be holy, and be happy.
Whatever, Jeff.
I am Edward R. Murrow, or I'm nothing.
All right, man. Folks, have a great week.
Have a good week, everybody. Talk to you later. Bye.